This is our last year of the season. That's bittersweet. Bittersweet. Bitter for obvious reasons, but also sweet for Hashem. We've had three very productive years of learning in this year, and look forward in the fall to having a fourth. As we, by then, we'll hopefully, if we finish tonight, be up to the eighth parak, which is a good note. I wish I could end on a good note. Maybe Lashem Skula will just read the first pasuk of Parak Ches. But the eighth parak begins with the change in the tide, pun intended. In terms of the good news, but we finish the destruction and the death this evening. What I'd like to do is read the few psukim that conclude the perek and share with you, for the most part, or really three things. Some issues which come out of the text, which you may be sensitive to, and I'll just share with you, I didn't make a marmakomos for them, just some of the issues that are discussed and point into your attention in terms of some of the mafarshim. Then I want to introduce you to one issue, which is all of the sources on the front side of the sheet, or the title page that I have for you, the first sheet. And then I want to spend time, I mentioned to Gene right before this year, I hadn't realized this last week, but once I started looking at the psukim in preparation for this evening's shir, it jumped out at me. I realized that one of the psukim, which we'll get to this evening, is actually not the source, but a source, which is used by many of the even classical, when I say classical, I mean the 19th century or even somewhat earlier, Mefarshim, who discussed some of the challenges that the issues of the flood that the Mabul have in terms of our own sense of how old the world is, carbon dating, fossils, dinosaurs, etc. Some of that comes out of the flood. Now, we alluded to some of those issues, I was it 2 years ago maybe, we discussed Maisa Bereishis and issues, obviously, of science and Torah then. And the truth is, we could perhaps have been doing even more as we went through the Mabul, although it wasn't really my focus. But the truth is, what we'll do tonight, there's more than we'll discuss tonight, but at least a little bit of the flavor of some of the issues we will discuss, at least from one perspective, this evening. So we left off at Pasuk Chav Beis. So let's read the last few psukim and conclude. Sorry? Herig Zayin, Pasuk Chav Beis. That's where we left off. So last week we saw this idea of Bayigva Kol Basar, right? That's how we ended last week, that everything expired, everything was killed. And again, and there was a certain order, both in terms of the fact that you had the weakest creatures that were killed right away. Yet birds, even we saw, were killed in the downpour. Are we all there? It's a good place, Sefer Shmos. There's no flood in Sefer Shmos. Anyway. We saw that this pasuk, the Mefarshim point out, it was in a specific order because it was survival of the fittest, and the weakest animals got killed first, and then you had animals who were stronger, animals who were a little bit more clever, and finally all the human beings were killed because, as the Mefarshim said, the human beings were the most clever. They climbed up to the highest mountains, but at the end of the day, the water was too high, too strong, too destructive, and in the end, Yigva, everybody, Kolbasar, everyone died.
Chup.
We didn't read it yet.
Oh, I thought
so that's what we're up to.
You were reviewing that.
No, we're up to. Well, when I was reading Zayigva, Pasuk Chav Aleph, we're up to now Chafetz. We didn't read it yet. So you may ask the question, but not yet. Pasuk Chafetz. Kol Asher Nishmas Ruach Chaim Ba'afav. Any creature that has what? How do you translate Nishmas Ruach Chaim? So what did you say?
Breathing. Breath of the spirit of life.
Spirit. Right. Well, where do you get breath from? So where do you get spirit?
Ruach.
Or you can, but there's two different words.
Okay. So we'll have to see that's an issue. What is being discussed here? And the part of the issue is translation, but the larger issue is what's being described here. All living creatures or just mankind?
That's all I'm asking.
Okay? Good. That's a good question. Good correct. Yep.
Because the way that the Ranisham created, I just thought human beings was to blow.
Right, good, very good, excellent. So if you assume, before we even get to some of the answers, but you're anticipating the question excellently, Joe, which is that this, the thrust of the Pasuk seems like it's every, all living creatures, especially coming after the previous Pasuk. But some of you point out, not only the breath of, but neshama, the word neshama, and that's what I thought you were getting to, if you use that in a spirit sense, the neshama is usually presumed to be something unique to human beings. So, what's going on here? So that is something that is discussed by Mepharshim. You anticipated it perfectly. V'kol asher v'charava mezu. Everything that was on the dry land died. And of course, what is this pasuk implying? Some of which we know already.
Fish.
That the fish, Nemo, survives. Right? That the fish made it, and they survived. Pasuk continues. Chaf kimol v'yimach eskol hayakum. Now again, we have, I mentioned at the beginning of last week's shiur, Don C. Hoffman and others pointing out that we have a lot of repetition and a lot of graphic language. And again, it's all intentional because it's trying, as we would say, to create the mood, to try to, you know, recreate that we should realize, you know, it's escalating. Killed, wiped out, and now we have Vayimach, you know, totally obliterated, wiped out. And as we'll see, some of the Mepharshim assume that this means that there's not a remnant of. Vayimach, Eskola Yukum Asher Al Pnei Ha'adama. Wiped out of existence everything that had been on the face of the earth. The Adam, Ad Behema, the human beings, the animals, Ad Remes, creepy crawly things, Ad Ofa Shemayim, the birds that were killed. But Yamachu Min Aretz, they were wiped out from the land, nothing left of them. Yisharach Noach, Asher Ito Bateva. The only ones who survived were Noach and those who were with him, meaning animal and human, in the Teva. Let me ask you a question just to consider in light of this pasuk. When Noah comes out of the ark a year later, what does he see on the ground? What would you expect him to see on the ground?
Corpses
everywhere. Now, what do you think he saw?
Nothing.
Well, why not? Where'd they go? Okay, so that's the issue that the Mepharshim discussed from this pasuk.
The word was boiling hot. It could have disintegrated.
Okay, good. So, vayimach. Exactly, vayimach. That's exactly my point. Vayimach, that's the Mepharshim point out. There was no remnant left. Which in a certain sense was almost a rachmanis for Noah. I'm not sure that's why it happened. Because you imagine, we've spoken about the fact that Noah was, on different levels, traumatized by the whole thing. And who wouldn't be, frankly? Knowing it was coming, anticipating it was coming, surviving it, you know, that's, there's a term for that psychologically, survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just reading now, my uncle came for Shabbos and he brought me an unbelievable book. I hold it like a chiyuv for every American to read. It's not political at all, you could like the war, don't like the war, it doesn't matter, but it's about the Iraq war. It's a story primarily focused on one guy, but broader than that, a little bit, of the death notifications. A guy who gets the job from the Marines when Nebuchadnezzar, when one of the soldiers dies, he's the one who has to go to the family and tell them.
Oh, wow.
I talk about our job. And I'm telling you, at various points reading the book, I had tears coming down my face. It is so, it won the Pulitzer Prize. I mean, this is it's not like I discovered or my uncle discovered the book. It's already been discovered. It won the Pulitzer Prize. It is so powerful.
What's the name?
I don't remember, but... if you ask me when I'm home or when I've had a chance to remember, I'm not done with it yet, but it is, you know, whatever you feel about it, we should appreciate the human sacrifice of those who are sacrificing, without a doubt. So the bottom line is that one of the things they speak about, one of the chapters I was just reading, was about a medic who was killed. And shortly before he was killed, he had saved the life of a different Marine who almost got killed and was maimed, I don't want to be graphic, in very significant ways. And he was literally bleeding to death and wanted to give up, and how the doctor didn't just nurse him physically, but was encouraging him, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up. And he's alive. He survived. So aside from the two independent tales, the part which is most incredible, which I was just reading earlier today, was when they had the funeral for the medic, and the guy whose life he had saved comes to meet the medic's parents. I mean, it's just powerful stuff. So he is filled with survivor's guilt. He is submitted, why did I survive and your son didn't? But that's, I mean, that could be applied to everyone in the platoon. I mean, all these things. It's very, very powerful stuff. So Noach, apparently, Mepharshim point out, was spared that, Rachmanus. That was spared. Because V'yimach, everything disintegrated. Everything disintegrated. We'll have to see if that's really the case. And again, that certainly raises the issue you could already anticipate. What? How do we understand fossils then? Okay. Finally, v'yikbru hamayim al aretz, the water increased or strengthened on the earth, chamishim u'ma'asyom, 150 days. And of course, the question here is, what does v'yikbru mean? That's number one. Number two is, what's 150 days? I thought it rained for 40 days. So what's the chronology here? Okay? So just so that we can end on a good note, v'yiskor l'kim es noach, v'yachas pasak aleph, Hashem remembers Noach, ve'ez kol ha'chaya, all of the animals, and us called the name of the wild animals, asheri tova teva, that are with him in the teva, ve'yaver elukim ruach al aretz, Hashem's spirit passes over the earth, and finally, we have really the turning of the tide, ve'shoku ha'mayim, the waters finally subside, and that's the beginning of the restoration. But let's go back now and finish up again some of the issues, some loose ends and two very interesting issues that emerge from these final three psukim. So the first issue which we mentioned, which Joel already anticipated, is what is Nishmas Chaim? What is Nishmas Chaim? So, look at Rashi. Rashi says, Nishmas Ruachayim, Nishima Sharuachayim. Rashi changes the word, or obviously changes the vocalization. Not Nishmas, but it's from Nishimas. What's the difference between Nishmas and Nishimas? Nishmas means spirit or soul. Nishimas means breath. And the Mizrahi, before the political party, was a commentary on Rashi, right? Not a commentary on the Chumash, a commentary on Rashi. The Mizrahi explains that exactly the tension that we discussed, that Joel picked up on, that's exactly Barsha Kivanta, that's exactly what prompted this otherwise radical pshat of Rashi. We have to reread a root for it. So the answer is no, because as we said, the previous pasuk, the clear thrust of the pasukim is that we're talking about all the creatures, not just the human beings. And yet, there is an assumption, both theologically and even in terms of just Perish HaMilim and Pshat HaMikra, that the word Neshama is limited to human beings. So if that's the case, Nishmas, Kol Ruach Chaim, seems to be a contradiction. So Rashi says, Nishmas doesn't mean Nishmas in the sense of the soul, which all human beings have, it means Nishimas, every breathing creature. Okay, animals can breathe also, yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Had the Torah said, Kol Asher Ruach Chaim Biapov, without having the word Nishmas, I don't know how you could interpret it any other way. I mean, I don't know. In other words, I just wonder why that specifically the Torah had this.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, and I'll just point out, in long gut lines, that Ibn Ezra therefore disagrees with Rashi.
He what?
Disagrees.
Or disagrees.
Ibn Ezra says Neshama means Neshama. There's no Yod there. But Ibn Ezra says it means just the human being. This possible is one time with human beings. There's a particular dimension of the tragedy that all of
it refers to human beings.
Yes. Rashi, okay, because both agree, the one thing they agree on, that Nishmas are first human beings. So Rashi says, but the clear thrust of the Pasuk refers to everything. Oh, changed it to Nishimas. Ibn Ezra doesn't like that. Doesn't play that game. Ibn Ezra says, well, Nishmas? Nishmas means only man. Radak, and perhaps, Maya, maybe it's anticipating what you said, that Radak tries to synthesize the two. And maybe it's because of Nishmas versus Ruach. Now, I don't remember which one is which, but anyway, take a look at the Radak. The Radak does seem to have a cake and eat it too. But the basic famous machlokas between Ibn Ezra and Rashi is this Nishmas or Nishimas. So that's issue number one. If we're just going al Seder the Psukim, the next issue I would discuss with you is the fossils, but I want to hold off on that for a second. Let's hold off. We'll get that. We'll get back to that for the end of this year. When we say here in Pasuk Chaf Gimel that they were wiped off, apnei ha'adama, they were completely wiped off the face of the earth. So what is that referring to? What was wiped off? So just 2 points to mention here again. I didn't put it on the sheet, but just some loose ends, if you will. So first of all, kol ha'yakum, it's an interesting phrase. Abarbanel says yakum What does that imply? Like, big, right? Yakum, standing. So, Abar Rinal says the Yakum refers not just to living things, but inanimate objects. It refers to the big buildings also. Now, we know, again, whether the Abar Rinal is right or not about the Pasuk, we know that everything was destroyed. We saw that last week. But the Abar Rinal does read that into the word Kol HaYakum. It means anything that was standing, anything that was there, even the big things.
It's difficult because the Torah defines it. May other my benim or benefit. Although it's right after Kol Yakum, the Torah.
Again, but
I mean, like a definition.
No, or that would be simple. Or according to Barbanel, if Yakum means that, so what do you need to tell me? I don't know, but then it's redundant, unnecessary.
Kol Yakum is anything that was established, anything that was built.
Yes, yes, exactly. That was established or standing, exactly. So the chiddush of Yakum is that it even applies to inanimate objects. It then specifies the animate objects.
Harim were still there.
Huh?
Harim.
Correct. Well, the question, yeah, did those get this? I don't
they,
but
they stayed because it saw the water.
Right, that's a good point.
Feet above the
that's a good point. That's
mountain,
a,
so
yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure why that would be. It's a good point. That's a good point.
So the rabbi wouldn't accept the translation of existence. Unless you can think of a building that exists.
Right, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Also, just to point out, an interesting Gemara, an ethical, moral Gemara. The Gemara here darshins this pasuk that it doesn't just mean wiped off the face of this earth or this world, it means the next world as well. What do you mean wiped out? So, I died, okay, but you know what do we often say? He's transported to another place. No. These people were vayimach. They're wiped out, says the Gemara. It means the generation of the flood, not only did they have to be wiped off the face of this world, and they're from that group, a small group of people in all of human history, that they have zero ein lo chelek, the olam haba. So again, just an interesting thought, which is brought out at least by some of Farshim by this pasuk. Another issue which is worth mentioning is when it comes to Noach. The pasuk had said that the only people who survived were Yishach Noach. Asher Ito Bateva, and that who was with those were with him in the Teva. So take a look at Rashi. There's a very famous Rashi here. Ach Noach. So Rashi gives two pshatim. The drush, the medrush, is the famous one. Let's first see the pshat. Rashi says Ach Noach. Noach is the only one who survived. Levad Noach, only Noach. Sehu pshuto. However, he says the medrash Agada tells us Goneach Bukohe Dom. Actually, there's two versions of this medrash, and this first part is probably not as well known anyway. Rashi says, the first thing is that the medrash says that Noach himself was very, very weak, in a very precarious position. He was goneach, he had a terrible cough, so bad that he was coughing up blood. Kohed dam. The Mepharshim point out, where do you get that medrash from? Because ach is usually lamaid. Ach is to exclude. So the simple, the pshuto, as we said, pshuto is to exclude all the other people. But the Medrash says, no, it's to, so to speak, exclude himself. But part of him didn't survive, meaning he was weakened by the whole experience. Why was he in such a terrible condition that he's coughing up blood? Says the Medrash, continuing in Rashi, Mitorah ha-behemos v'achayos. It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy running around after all the animals. He was physically worn down. We know that, we see that sometimes, people who are working so hard, you know, we know, no sleep, running around, you know, sometimes you see people, they say, you know, you got to get some sleep, if you don't get some sleep, you're going to get sick, you're going to fall apart, you got to take care of yourself. But Noach couldn't take care of himself, so the inevitable exhaustion led to physical breakdown. He was not healthy, but he had no choice. In that sense, he had to sacrifice in order, at least part of him, that's the ach, for everyone to survive. Now, building on that, which I surmised, I think correctly, is not perhaps so well known. Building on that, comes along Rashi then and tells us another variation of that medrash, which is perhaps the part that is most well known. Yeshomrim, another version of the medrash, is that in what way was Noach diminished? Not because he was working so hard, in general, I mean, which of course he was, not a natural result of the great effort that he was exhausting himself, but specifically Yeshomrim, Sheichir Mazonis La'ari. One day he came late to the lion. You've heard this medrash. One day he came late to feed the lion. The lion got all angry. The Yikisho, and the lion attacked him and caught him. A love hat namar. And about that it was said, Hein tzadik v'aretz yishulam. the righteous one is, so to speak, paid in the earth, meaning he did an Avera, and rather than getting punished in the next world, better for Noach, he just got a little scratch. And some of Farshim say that Noach limped the rest of his life because of this attack by the lion. So, sorry?
That's why again you should feed your animals before you eat yourself.
So I just think it's important to know, first of all, that all of this, Rashi tells us all of this, is obviously a drush. None of that is a parshat pshat in the pasuk. The parshat pshat in the pasuk is that only he survived, meaning no one else survived, everyone else died. If you'll say there's a drasha that somehow even he didn't totally survive, he was diminished, even then there's two explanations. And while, for obvious reasons, especially for children, but even for adults, there's something almost charming, although I imagine not for Noach at the moment, something almost charming about this sight. You know, when I read the Rashi, half the room giggled. Something charming about this idea of, you know, the lion getting angry and pawing him. The truth is that I think that that the first version of the Rashi is perhaps more important. In other words, it's a powerful, powerful, again, we're trying to get a deeper thing, what was going on? So we're always looking for clues for the psychology and the emotional well-being of Noach. That to me is, which we spoke about a little bit a few minutes ago, that's very important. But also just to get a picture of what's going on. So I don't know about you, I can't say I thought about it ever too much before this. But I don't know if I ever, to the extent that I ever thought about it, you know, I assumed that Noach was busy. But I assumed that he was, you know, vigorous and vibrant, weathered, not necessarily he was in good shape, but because that was probably a bracha that Hashem gave him, you know, if Hashem was going to save him. I didn't have an image of Noach, you know, barely holding it together in the ark. Right? I never had such an image. But according to that middle of the three pshatim that's quoted in Rashi, you get that sense. Now, man, maybe psychologically, mentally he was holding it together, that could be, although we've seen that was a challenge for him. But okay, mind over matter, he did it. And that, again, getting back to what we began the parsha with, the heroism of Noach. You know, two cheers or three cheers for Noach. You know, so again, it wasn't just what he did to deserve to be saved. But if we just had, you know, we're writing the biography of Noach, a chapter of this period would be also kind of fine a chapter. This would also be impressive about Noach, that, you know, to have such a level of dedication to everything around him that he even got himself sick. You know, we can imagine, you know, coughing up blood, and yet he still did everything. That's it's a whole new dimension, a whole new image to the story. Let's do one more issue, which again will be the other issue which I want to get into depth, which has to do with, is it really true that Noah, that only the people in the ark were saved, or did anyone survive besides that? I want to get to that as well. And that sequentially we would do it now, but because that's going to be something more on the sheet, let's just finish one final issue which I didn't put out Mar Mekomos on, but just to note, and then we'll go back and see the two topics which are discussed in depth on the source sheets. And then it comes from the final pasuk, V'yiburu ha'mayim al aretz chamishim u'mas yom. So what exactly was going on during this 150-day period? What was going on? So first of all, there's a big discussion of Farshim. Does the 150 days include the 40? Is it after the 40? That to me is one type of question, although not necessarily so thrilling. But what's interesting is that there is a discussion of Farshim. What does this mean, V'yiburu? Because didn't we get through seeing in previous shurim that it really was only raining for 40 days? So what does that mean, v'yigburu? So some of Farshim say as follows. Some of Farshim say, yes, it stopped raining after 40 days, but as we kind of alluded to, I think it was the last week or the week before, there was kind of a delayed reaction. In other words, when you have with the rain for that long at that speed, it's not just that the earth can only absorb so much, it can only spit out so much. It was long gone from the time it was absorbing. It was already flooding. But still, there was so much that it was still rising. There was that much rain that it was still, you know, the momentum, if you will, the inertia that was created was still going for 100, you know, at least another 110 days of not a complete 150 days. That's one shot. A second shot, Ebenezer says, is that it's the consistent, constant rain stopped after 40 days. But v'yigburu ma'as v'chamishim yom, it rained intermittently going up to 150 days. It rained intermittently even 150 days, and therefore that's why the water kept on rising. In fact, he brings a proof for that. If we take a look at Perches Pasuk Beis, what we'll begin with Yerush Hashem next season, there the Pasuk says, "V'yisachru ma'ayinos tohom v'rubos ha'shamayim v'yikalei ha'geshem min ha'shamayim." At that Pasuk it says it stopped raining. What do you mean? Stopped raining then or stopped raining after 40 days? So Eben Ezra says it stopped raining constantly, consistently after 40 days. But it rained intermittently. All of this, where do you get both these pshatim? From Vayigbaru. If the water was going up, if the water is increasing in these 150 days, what's going on? I saw that there's some other Mefarshim who said that this was all based on Noah's perception. It wasn't really true. It was so violent, getting back to our topic, that Radak from last week. So from Noah's perception, he felt as if things didn't calm down until 150 days. And even within here, you have some of Farshim who say he had a little window and Noah was looking out. From his perspective, it looked like the water was getting higher even if it wasn't. Other Farshim say there was no window, Noah couldn't see anything. You know, we said there was a lash, but he doesn't open the lash until the end of the story. And therefore, again, maybe it was just a question of the feeling. But either way, what the Mefarshim are arguing about, in essence, is how to understand Vayikru, and how to understand this period of time as it relates to what was supposed to be the initial, if not intensive, period of the 40 days. Okay, so those were a few of the loose ends which are interesting that Mefarshim discuss in these three psukim. But the two issues which caught my attention more specifically, which I want to now turn our attention to the source sheets for, relate, and we'll do it out of order in terms of the sequence of the psukim, but let's start with the front sheet, the title sheet, and that is the question of who really survived the flood. So we're always taught, and the psukim seem to tell us, I mean, it's not like we're guessing, the psukim tell us that who survived the flood. Do we have extra sheets for Joel? Joel, you have
right here.
Take it
out,
Joel.
Fine.
The trees, Joel. Shouldn't go to waste. You can still bond. The pasuk keeps on saying only Noach and those who were ito bateva, those who were with him in the teva. So, as you may know, there is a well-known midrashic tradition that not so fast. Perhaps someone else survived the flood. And in fact, we'll mention the Gemara actually discusses a particular creature that may have survived the flood, even though it wasn't in the ark, although it's not clear to me, even according to the Gemara, why it wasn't in the ark. But anyway, take a look, the first source. Actually, we'll do the Gemara Nida first. The Gemara Nida really is the most famous source. Second source on the sheet, the Gemara Nida tells us, the Pasuk in Bamidbar Perachaf Aleph, when Moshe is preparing to fight Og, Melech HaBashan. So Hashem says, V'yomer Hashem HaMoshe, Al Tira, don't be afraid. Says the Gemara, Michdi. Let's see. Sichon V'og Achei Havu. We have a tradition that these two famous kings, Sichon and Og, were brothers. G'omar Mar, why do we know that? Because there's a tradition that says, Sichon V'og are both the children, B'nei Achia Bar Shamchazai Havu. Who was Shamchazai? Shamchazai, we saw this going way back. If you remember, we saw at the end of Perek Vav, there was this tradition that perhaps some of the Nephilim, who were the Nephilim? So some said it was these like deviant angels that fell to earth. If you remember that, I think it was at the end of this year or the end of last year that we learned that, I don't remember. So that was, if there was such a deviant angel, that was this guy, Shamchazai. So they say that they are both descendants, they're both brothers, descendants of that union. So in light of that, if that's the case, Gemara asks, Maishna me Og to kamistafi, why is Og different that Moshe apparently was fearful of him? Maishna me Sichon to lo kamistafi. We don't have any pasuk telling Moshe, don't be afraid of Sichon. Presumably he wasn't afraid. But why wasn't he afraid? If they're both brothers, then presumably they're both, if Og was big and strong, then Sichon was big and strong. Why was Hashem afraid? Why was Moshe afraid of one and not the other? Amr of Yochanan Arishav Yechai. They have the following answer. Mishuvoso Shalosh Tzadik Ata Yodea Ahaya Baliba. We can infer it from the continuation. Amar, what was the speculation? What was Moshe's fear? Shema Tamud Lo Zechus Shel Avraham Avinu. It wasn't in a Ganami, you're right, from a physical perspective, they're both equally intimidating, but Moshe was not intimidated by either of them from a physical perspective. But he was uniquely fearful of Og. Why? Because apparently Og had a Zechus. Og had a special mitzvah where Moshe knew about it, and he was worried maybe Hashem will reward Og for his, will let him cash in his Zechus chip at the expense of the Jewish people at that moment. What was the Zechus that could have been so potent and powerful that Og had? What was that Zechus? It had to do with Avram Avinu. What's the story of Avram Avinu? Shneamar, this is the source of the whole thing, Perek Yedaled. V'yavo ha-polit, yagid Avram Ivri. So you recall, let's set the tone. We've got the four kings and the five kings. We've got a whole battle. V'yavo ha-polit, and a remnant, a survivor, comes and tells Avram that Lo, your nephew, has been kidnapped. Now, the simple shot in that pasuk, if you would read it 100 times, I guarantee you all 100 times, you would understand that pasuk to mean a survivor of those wars between the kings. However, there's a medrash, Chazal, the Gemara here is quoting a tradition, that the word polit somehow implies that he was already a survivor. Now, it wasn't just that he survived this moment. You don't have the title, you know, he's, when you talk about somebody, he's a survivor. We don't usually mean that he survived one thing. Or we wouldn't necessarily give him the title spontaneously when he survived that one thing. It's like by reputation, oh, this is known as the survivor, implying that there was something that happened previously that this person survived. Not just the battle, but perhaps something previously. In fact, what was that? Says the Gemara in conclusion, V'amar B'yofanon Zu'og Shepalat Midor Hamabu. Who was the one who came and told Avram the news about Lot? None other than your friendly neighborhood giant, Og. And Og was the polit. He's known as the survivor. Not because he survived that war, because he's a survivor is not someone who survives once. That could just be lucky. But he's already twice cheated death. He survived the flood. Now, we don't know how he survived the flood.
Yeah, well, what would he do with the Chafal? That would be, I mean, Chafal.
They say he stood on the map.
He says, you know, how could that be?
It's the exclusion. That means everyone but. Everyone but.
Everyone's right.
Yeah.
Called.
Well, maybe that's why I use it better.
All are done.
Yeah.
No exceptions.
Yeah.
The story is that he stood on the highest mountain and he was able to survive.
Musa, I'm not sure. I'm actually not familiar with that.
No.
Look at
it. I'm going.
Good. Good. There's more sources on the sheet. Ladies and gentlemen, there's more sources on the sheet. Take a break.
That's why it's a medrash.
Take a break and a breath. Take a break and a breath. Let's see the other sources. So let's go back now to the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. The Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, the top source, says the following. Oh, I'm sorry. I really did this out of order. I'm sorry. I forgot. Forgive me. I forgot in my rush to prepare the sheet that I, subsequent to making the last 4 sources, I put in this top one as the 5th. It really precedes the issue of Noach. It gets back to the whole psychology of Noach. I'm sorry. Forgive me for 1 second. Let's just see that it's worth it, seeing Pirkei Eliezer. Pirkei Eliezer says, the whole time Noach was on the ark, so we discussed that he physically run down. But psychologically, he was getting worn down as well, according to the Pirkei Eliezer. The whole time he was there, Noach hayev mispalel lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Noach is davening to Hashem, v'omer ribon olamim, hotzieini mimizkar hazeh, take me out of this terrible prison. Ki ayefa nafshi. I'm exhausted. Me'reach arayos. Arayos meaning the animals.
Yeah.
You know, the lions. You know, I don't know if he means he just got bothered by the stench, or it means more figuratively, enough, I'm wiped. And again, this could definitely be physical, but I could easily see this as being almost a psychological or an emotional. He's worn down. He's davening Hashem, get me out of here. So again, just adds to a dimension of our understanding of Noach and the challenge that he had in the ark, beyond all of his years of life before the ark. In terms of this Gemara, though, so the Pirkei Eliezer, it's the same Pirkei Eliezer, it's the same chapter, Perkov Gimel, comments, 3rd source on your sheet. Pasuk tells us, "V'hamayim gavru ma'od ma'od." Everything we'll call you kumi mashapne adamah. That's the pasuk we just said. Chutz minoach sheita b'teva. We just read that pasuk, right? Second line underlined. Not just chutz minoach, but chutz mi'og melech habashan. And what is the story according to this text? How did Noach Og survive? Shuyashav al eid echad tachas silonis shel teva. He was hanging on to the roof. He was hanging on. He was sitting on top. He was sitting on top of the. He jumped up on top, and he sort of, he rode out the storm that way. And he begged Noach, Benishbal Noach, he swore to Noach. Noach knew he was there. He made a deal with Noach. Shiulam Evidli Olam. He says, if you let me survive, if you'll feed me, you'll keep me going, I'll promise you I'll be your servant forever. Masa Noach, so what did Noach do? He gave Chor Echad Beteva, he pierced a hole in the top of the ark. By Moshe Lamazon B'chol Yom V'yom, and he fed Og as well. Benishar Gamhu. And he also survived. And this is alluded to in both in Chumash and in Navi, if I'm not mistaken, I think in Tanakh, three different times. The Torah refers to Og as Mel Chaboshan Nishar Miyeser HaRifaim. Now, what does Yeser HaRifaim? That's a very difficult phrase. And if you look in the Mefarshim, it comes up in Dvarim once, Yahushua once, and I can't remember the third time. Maybe it was also in Yeshua, I don't remember. I did a search to see what it was. Anyway, in all those cases, you see the Mefarshim, I'm not sure what it refers to. But clearly, the Gemara here refers, thinks it means, I'm not even sure etymologically what the proof is, but the Gemara, said, the Pirkei Avos says, it refers to somehow that he was Nishar, again, the idea that he was a survivor. And survivor here, you know, even from all the other giants and all the other things, he was the one who survived. Now, if you think that that's sensational enough, and again, I still am not sure, I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but Gene, if you find me a source about the mountain, I'd be curious to see where that is. I did not find it. But there is an additional theory, which I admit I also didn't know about, and that is quoted by Rashi. I'm not sure if anyone else says that, but Rashi says, and neither on that Gemara, even though the Gemara says, again, remember, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says he climbed on the roof. The Gemara Nida didn't say how. The Gemara Nida just said he survived. Didn't say how. So Rashi in that Gemara said, Shabarach l'Eretz Yisrael. He ran away to Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's more surprising and more confusing is Kid Amrin and Bechelek, which, as it says, Chelek is allusion to the famous Perek in Masechta Sanhedrin. But Farshim will point out there is no discussion of Og and Chelek. There's no discussion. So there's a Pirkei Eliezer, there's an Medrash, there's a Gemara. This Rashi is very, very difficult. The Marsha on this Gemara points out, as the other Farshim, that Rashi must be alluding to a discussion in the Gemara Masechta Zvachim. Gemara Masechta Lezvachim, I figure after 113 dapim of Karbonos and Kachim, the Gemara thinks you're exhausted. So to keep the Dapiomi guys awake that day, it gave them a whole break from the Kachim and the Karbonos, gave them a whole fascinating discussion about the context there, just so you should know in all seriousness, was whether Eretz Yisrael has Tumah, any, could there be mass Tumah in Eretz Yisrael? And the Gemara seems to be assuming not. And then the Gemara asks, well, what happened in the act of the Churban? Were their bodies strewn everywhere? What about Meisei Nebuchadnezzar? And what about Dor HaMabul? Right? So if there was dead people everywhere, so dead people in China, dead people in India, dead people in North America, dead people in that little sliver of land we call Eretz Yisrael. In that context, says the Gemara, we have Machlokes. Bishlom Alamand Amar Lo Yorad Mabul Eretz Yisrael. There's an opinion in the Gemara that says, miraculously, obviously, that the flood never, ever went into Eretz Yisrael. So, and that's why, also, just so you should know, the Gemara talks about a certain animal known as the Rima. I'm not sure why. Maybe I missed it in the Gemara. I'm not sure why offhand. I thought about this a few minutes ago. Why would the Rima not be... I think the Farshim said, this Rima, I don't know what it is. And I don't know if in the Mysterious Creatures book talks about it. Take a look. The Rima. The Rima apparently was so huge and so gigantic it could not fit into the ark. But we assume that it somehow survived. So this opinion says, how did the Rima survive? The Rima went to Eretz Yisrael. Because Lo Yarad Mabul Eretz Yisrael. El Lamand Omer Yarad, but there's another opinion that says, no, the Mabul was everywhere, even in Eretz Yisrael. Rima Hechakam, how did this Rima animal survive? And you'll see, so the Gemara says, well, Ha'omer of Chizda, Anche Dor HaMabul, Berotchen Kelkulu, Berotchen Nidonu, we saw that. We saw that previous week, that the water was boiling hot, it was scalding hot to begin with, the water of the flood. So, the shaila there is, so what about these poor animals? If they're in the water, they're going to get scalded. The tameich, but that's really true, that there was boiling hot water. Teva hechasagya. We learned that when Noah was building the ark, right, reminiscent on a much grander scale of what the Torah tells us about having the Moshe and his ark, right? Gopher revised Mechudiyah, you make sure it's waterproof. So they smeared, Noah smeared something on it to make it waterproof. It shouldn't leak. But the Gemara assumes, science number 101, if the water was hot, it would have dissolved that smear. So the Gemara says, if it was really hot water, how did the ark survive? If Ode, and if the and another child, if the water is so hot, Ogh, our good friend, friendly neighborhood giant, Ogh, Melech HaBoshen Eichon Kai, how did he survive? And here the assumption is that he wasn't on top of the ark, but hanging on the side. Because if he was on top of the ark, he would have been totally above the water. But apparently he was hanging on to the ark. I think as a kid I learned this pshat. He was hanging on to the ark. So the rest of his body was submerged. He was tall enough that his head could stay above water. That was pretty tall. But he was still in the water according to the Sashita. Gemara says, Neis Nasalem. There was a miracle. Shenitztanenu b'tzidei teva. It's true that the water was boiling, except for the water that butted up against the teva. Wherever the teva floated, that water that was in the immediate proximity of it miraculously cooled off. And that's how this Rima survived, according to the opinion that it couldn't flee there to Israel. And that's also how Og survived. So, just getting back to Rashi, so some of Farshim say that the Gemara mentions this idea of Og floating in the water, but the water being miraculously cool near the Teva, according to which opinion? According to the opinion that said the whole world flooded, and therefore had an Og die? Had it survive? The Gemara never addresses, or never said that according to the other opinion. What happened to Og, according to the Mand Amar that says that the water didn't flood Eretz Yisrael? Because if that's the case, we didn't have to come on to this miracle of the cooling. So they suggest, the Marsha says, that's where Rashi comes in. Rashi figured that was what happened. You know, Og was the first Zionist. Og fled to Eretz Yisrael. That's what Rashi says.
How about all the other people in Eretz Yisrael?
Very good. So they good. So the Mefarshim say, this is also by Sanhedrin Gemara, that because of the meteorological issues of the flood, the atmospheric conditions in Eretz Yisrael, and there were animals, forget people, there were animals living in ancient Mesopotamia. So the atmosphere, even for the opinion there was a flood there, but the atmospheric conditions were so highly wired that no one could survive. Oh, wow. Marsha says it's for the Rashi. Oh, if you accept that approach, he was so big and strong that he could survive even those difficult atmospheric conditions. So we have at least three pshat dimin of genes, right? A fourth pshat, and how did Og survive?
I wonder what his chus was. I mean, what did he do?
Well, either it's what he did,
he didn't,
or maybe Rashi, or I don't know, or maybe, you know, sometimes Hashem saves somebody because he needs you for something else.
But Noah wasn't told to have Noah have a chutzpah to feed him.
I would say, Noah, it's not my business. Noah was never told to kill anybody. You know, if I'm Noah, I figure Hashem can kill the whole world. He can kill Og too if he wants. Anyway, the bottom line is either he was on top of the ark, either he was on the side of the ark in the water with the miraculous cooling off of the water, or he ran to Eretz Yisrael. Sometimes Aliyah has a bigger miracle. He ran to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Either way, we have this tradition, which is obviously all a drush, that Og survived one way or the other.
I believe you understand that Eretz Yisrael already got that pinch. I mean, Hashem created the world. I guess Eretz Yisrael had a certain...
Absolutely. We generally assume that, although it's not so simple. According to this opinion, for sure, yes. In general, we have a machlokes about Kedusha, in general, whether Kedusha is innate or somehow acquired. I mean, you have that machlokes about a lot of things. Lashon HaKodesh. What makes Lashon HaKodesh Lashon HaKodesh? So some of our Farshim say it's innate. It's somehow innately Kadosh, primordially. And that's why the Torah was written in Lashon HaKodesh. That's why Hashem created the world, Basara Mamaros, in Hebrew language. Other Farshim say, no, just the opposite. Because Hashem used it to create the world, therefore it's Kadosh. Because we use it right there, therefore it's Kadosh. So the big shaila is about Eretz Yisrael. Is Eretz Yisrael innately Kadosh? And that's why it became the chosen land, it has mitzvos? Or do we say, no, Hashem chose to give it to Avraham and give it to us and give it mitzvos, and that's why it's Kadosh. And this discussion might be very important, very much part of that, because l'cha'ora, nothing yet happened in Eretz Yisrael that would have given it Kedusha. So if you assume that a miracle happened and there was no flooding in Eretz Yisrael, I would say the Pashtus, that is more consistent with the approach that Eretz Yisrael is innately HaKadosh, which anyway is probably the more mainstream view. If you want the somewhat iconoclastic or non-mainstream view, is a famous essay of the Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma basically writes that other than Hashem, there's no such thing as innately Kadosh anywhere, and that everything, even Torah, has acquired Kedusha. And he gives an example of Eretz Yisrael there. But other Mefarshim usually disagree with that. But this is certainly part of that picture. Okay, we have about 10, 15 minutes left. Let's conclude by seeing the back of the sheet, the second sheet. And this gets back to Pasuk HaGimel, Vayimach es kol hayikum. Everything was wiped out. Everything was wiped out, only the sword survived. And again, Mefarshim assume that one of the things that meant was a bracha, that when Noah descended from the ark, he didn't see bodies strewn everywhere, the way, God forbid, we see it all the time, right, like the tsunami, right, bodies washing up. Right, that makes it a very grisly thing, but that's Derech HaTeva. That's nature. That's normal. So, in light, in commenting on this pasuk, two different of our great achronim of the last 200 years, the Malbim and the Netziv, both use this pasuk as part of their analysis and reaction to something that was confronting already in its early stages of scientific development in their time. And that is the discovery of fossils and carbon dating. And we know, without being an expert, and I'm far from an expert, that the scientists, geologists, date these things at thousands and millions and billions of years. So how does that consistent with our general tradition of the year being 5,700 and currently 68 years old? So this is a huge topic. We are not remotely going to resolve it. And I want you to know, even though I'm quoting you the Malbim and the Netziv, this should not that they need my Haskama, but it should be taken as Haskama. I'm not necessarily agreeing with the Malbim and the Netziv, but they both are working off of our pasuk. So if we were doing a course in science and Torah, or creation of the Torah, so we could discuss all the different theories, including those who argue on this Malbim and Netziv. But we're doing Parshas Bereishis, Parshas Noach. So therefore, we're looking at two Mefarshim, which are Mamish. I didn't have to look for. These are both Mefarshim on our Pasuk. Now, they're both quoted. The Malbim is quoted by a few different places, but one book that quotes both of these is this book that I'm holding up now. As you may know, it's controversial, called The Challenge of Creation. This is the newer version, I think it is, yes. By Rabbi Nosson Natan Slifkin. Right. Hopefully by the time my daughter is old enough for Shidduchim, Noel will remember this picture, me holding it. No one has a camera phone here to hold it. Catch me with the book.
We won't
test it. Anyway, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't be embarrassed. I own the book. I own other books on this. Oh, there is a camera phone. Anyway.
Rabbi Weinreb.
Yes, Rabbi Weinreb is on the back. I'll tell you, Rabbi Weinreb. He also married off his kids. Anyway. Okay. In all seriousness, so the Malbim, you'll see, I gave you English translations of both, and the English translation comes from Rav Slifkin. So the problem, I also brought the original books here, because the Malbim in particular, I don't know why, the printing is very poor. If anyone wants to make a lot of money, they should probably reprint the Malbim in a better text, a better typeset, because it's very poor. Even when you read the book, it's hard, and it really didn't come out well in the Xeroxing. So try to follow along with me in the Xeroxing, and either way you should be able to follow in the English. So, what does the Malbim have to say in our pasuk? Here we are, we just think we're going along nicely. Noach, Ateva, you know, not getting in trouble or anything like that. Comes along the Malbim and says as follows. Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayimach. Now the part I'm reading now is before Rabbi Slifkin translates. I'll tell you when we get to the English there. Vayimach. Achar Shemesu Kulam. Kamasha Kaza Vayigva. Right, we read last week. Vayigva. They already expired. So what is Vayimach? Rather, and this is what I alluded to before, why were there no bodies for Noah to find? Nimuchu gam gufoseihem. Their body is dissolved. Shelo yimsa lomo she'eris aferema. They had no she'eris. There was nothing left of them. They were obliterated from the world. Ubezehaya behepech. And this, in the order, sequentially, was in the reverse order of what we saw how they died. They died in one order, weakest. Everything was weak. Here's weak also, but it's a different definition of weak. Start off with the birds and the animals, then Adam. Says the Malbim, here it's the opposite. Gufa Adam nimchatchila. The human beings dissolved first. The physical strength of a human being is less than animals, and therefore it dissolved first. Then the animals dissolved or were obliterated because they're a little bit stronger. Even though the bird and the ants or the creepy crawlers are not so strong, but they were small. They were able to crawl into holes underground, into caves, and therefore they survived a little bit longer. It's Kaimu Yoser. Umavar, and that's Pshat, v'yamochu min ha'aretz. Shigam sheharbe nisharu atmoseihem ha'chazakim. Here we're ready. Now you're ready for the translation. Ready? We're up to Rabbi Slipkin's translation now. I'm in the second paragraph on the sheet here, in the middle paragraph. Sheharbe nisharu atmoseihem ha'chazakim kematile barzel v'lona mochu. Ah, you'll tell me, we're finding remnants which seem to predate the flood, i.e. things which are older than that time, or even a significant older, from that time. How can it be from that time that they all dissolve? Says the Malbim, Enechanami. But there were some that were so strong, I don't know if you want to insert the word dinosaurs here or not, he doesn't use that word, I don't know, but he says there are some animals that were so strong, he says they remained like iron javelins. Their bones were so strong they did not dissolve, and we're finding them now, he says. They didn't dissolve, they didn't get obliterated. Becholzos, but nevertheless, but even those, when Noah left the Teva, they were already underground. They weren't on top of the earth where you would naturally have expected to find them. They weren't there. Basically, everything got topsy-turvy.
The earth
overturned. Yes, exactly. Everything got topsy-turvy. So, yes, it's true. As the water was receding, things were getting completely topsy-turvy so that that which was, even these super-sized, strong iron javelin animals were dead and lying on the face of the earth. But eventually, by the time Noah came out, he didn't see them anymore because the earth had totally overturned and therefore they got submerged to depths. So most of them are even deeper than we've, at least in his day, because we haven't even found them. They're too deep. Right, the inner part of the earth, it opened its mouth, so to speak. Omek to home from the deepest recesses of the earth. Yardu kama alafim ama la'amkishol, right? You know, thousands and thousands of feet down. Ad shebet seis noach on the table, so noach came out of the ark. Lo mota shum roshem, b'fagre balechaim. He didn't see any remnants, he didn't see any bones, he didn't see anything left of those animals. Ad samos anakim, and even the big giants and the strong people, he didn't see any of it. Shahayu korma mavel, even the biggest, strongest things, not, they all died.
Yes. The dinosaurs.
Could be. It could be. They all got killed. And there are bones that they were not obliterated in the sense of dissolved, but Noah still didn't see them because they got buried underneath the ground. And he says, now comes the polemic. Right? It wasn't like that Malbim was just writing in the Beis Medrash, oblivious to what was going on around them. He understood the zeitgeist and the issues that were being done with issues of evolution or fossils. So it comes along. So you would think, with all that, the Malbim accepts dinosaurs, accepts fossils. Yes, but he does not accept that it has any implication for dating the earth. It would seem to me, again, I'm not an expert in this topic, it seems to me the Malbim is clear, assuming that I think Alan is probably correct. He's referring to dinosaurs or something like that. Yes, they exist. They exist in the time of Noah. Yes, they were destroyed, and yes, when we find the bones that are so big, yes, because those animals were that big, they were huge, what we call dinosaurs. But when we talk about the dating of them, oh, it's a million years old, that the Malbim rejects. The Malbim rejects that. Says the Malbim, don't be foolish. Trust Hashem, trust the Torah. Lahoshiv davar lechachmeha geologia. The geologists, the chachamim, shachofrim amke adama. They're digging into the depths of the earth. They're having a dig. Motziim atzmos gedolos ve'anakim ba'alchaim gedolim. They're finding these huge bones. Shenevdu min aretz ve'enam od mimei amabul ve'elich. And they're claiming that they're od mimei. That even before they predate the flood by thousands of years. Based on the dating of these bones, they're quote unquote proving kadmas olam, that the earth predates what we thought it was. Because they have the assumption that based on what layer of the ground is found, you can make assumptions about the dating of that material. Each depth in the ground they have a science that corresponds to a certain number of years. And based on the ground quality, again, what's he talking about? I think carbon dating or some basic version of that. Right, I'm saying, but they're testing that layers of the earth. And,
different ages.
Right, they can, exactly, based on that science, where they find the bones, and therefore they date different species coming from different times based on where they find it. And therefore, until they get to thousands and thousands of years before we thought the world started. And therefore, as far as they're concerned, their animals were roaming the earth well before we thought the earth was ever created. Says the Malbim, calls a hevel reek. Ridiculous. Ki be'ez ha-mabul posko ha-doma es lo'a ha-idei ha-rashayim shebo mi-omek sh'ol. Right, the evil of the people was from the depths. And therefore, says he, from the depths, the world overturned.
Right, I mean, it's like the earthquake. Like
yes,
the
yes, yes. It opened up from, it opened up. But it's not just like an earthquake, it's more than that. That which was all the way at the bottom flipped up to the top and vice versa. The top went to the bottom. And that, those which were living at the time of Noah, even those bones which weren't obliterated and liquefied and survived, those got schlepped down to the bottom. So then the geologist comes and says, ooh, it's so far at the bottom. It must be that it's a million years old. Says the Malbim, no, it was from 5,768 years ago, or not even less. I take that back. Whatever. How many? What year of history did the flood happen?
Probably
a thousand. Maybe.
Whatever. Okay, we'll call it a thousand. I don't remember. So whatever. Well, that's when it came.
Abraham was 1948, so a couple hundred years. 1600.
Right. Whatever it was. Whatever it was. The point is that that's how old they were. It's just that they look like they're coming. You know, the scientists are basically being tricked because they don't know this Masorah. And then basically he just goes on and repeats that point. He doesn't add anything else. That's basically his point. So he's like a Moshe B'Miksas in dinosaurs, but in terms of the dating of the earth, he's a Kofar Bakol. He accepts again. As you know, there are plenty of people who say dinosaurs. Come on, it's a joke. There are no such thing as dinosaurs. So they would have to think on the Malbim. The Malbim seems to accept.
The question is though, why wasn't the dinosaurs taken into the Teva? Unless maybe they were too big. I mean, that doesn't answer the
right,
question.
Right, right, right. Good.
All dinosaurs were that big.
Right, so that's a question.
I don't understand why they're insisting that dinosaurs were alive when there was a table. Why couldn't they have already died out by that point, by the time the mumble came?
That's also possible. The truth of the matter is, did he say it explicitly?
I don't know.
He didn't say explicitly one way or the other, but the implication is right. He's commenting on a puzzle because everything
right,
was killed.
Right, right.
So it does sound like it was alive then. They were alive then. Well, I'm not sure.
Ima.
And listen, we're late, so let me just do the Netziv with you. Netziv is somewhat similar. In the Netziv, I think we can read in the sheet. It's a little bit easier to read. Ima Kol Yikum says in the Netziv again, Nimchu Hagufos, everything was obliterated. The Diek HaKosav HaShapnei Adamah, again, similar to the Malbim. It's Diek, the Pasuk is very specific, that it was on the face of the earth. Davka, Elu Shayim Menachem HaPi Adamah, that which was on the face of the earth, that was obliterated. But that doesn't mean that there weren't some remnants that survived. Avon the Shtairu Kamu Gufo Shunaf Aleim Ofer Harbe. But those things, in other words, basically, he's implying that at some point it was a process. They didn't get liquefied or dissolved immediately. Perhaps it was sitting in the water, that scalding water over 40 days that did it, or 100 days, whatever, 1,000, you know, a year's worth of days. But that's the only things that were exposed to the water. But in the tumult of the flood, a lot of things were, in a certain sense, insulated from that destructive power of the water because they were covered with dirt, says the Netziv. Venishru gufos kayamim, and again, they died, but their bodies or their bones remained. Behein hine atzamo shemutzien chofrei eretz. And what are those bones? That's what the geologists are finding nowadays, says the Netziv. In my day, the chofrei eretz, the diggers, the geologists, they're finding bones. And they look at it and they say, we don't have even animals like this. They don't exist at all. And there are some who suggest, well, maybe there was a whole other world that existed before ours. And that's where the other species come from. And then he points out to the famous Medrash that says that Hashem made many worlds before our world and destroyed them. So maybe you would think, as some of Farshim frankly do say, that this is a support for that Medrash. I'm not sure if he's explicitly referring to it or not, but one of the Yisrael Lipschitz, the Tiferes Yisrael, the Yochanan of Oz and the Mishnayis, when they first had, I think it was in Krakow, if I'm not mistaken, when they first had the first dinosaur exhibit, far from taking the, quote, from approach now of saying feh, he told his Balabatim Shabbashuva, everyone should take a Shabbatzir on that Shabbat afternoon, go to the museum and take a look at the dinosaur bones, because it's the greatest raya. For the Medrash, it's not just Chumash for Tarsha Baal Peh. We had this Medrash for years. We didn't know what it meant. What do you mean, Olam Asacheros? So it says, oh, it came, that's the dinosaur bones. That's the other worlds. And the Tziv says, no. And the Tziv says, no. After all, he says, it's a very attractive shot. The Tziv says, no, though. After all, I'll skip a few lines down. We come welcome Kashal Adati Lomer. He can't say that. Shabbavur Bishmas Rabbah. Then what happened? That's true that Hashem had all these previous worlds. But Hashem totally destroyed them. Why would you think that there's remnants of those worlds in our world? Those worlds were in who knows what solar system, or who knows where they were. But they were totally obliterated. There's nothing left of those worlds, says the Netziv. There's nothing left. So, if that's the case, what does the Netziv do with the fossils? So he says here, Nira Sha'at Samos Ha'elu. Maybe is it possible that they come even before the Mabul? He says, yes, there were animals that didn't exist, don't exist anymore, because that's all part of the terrible corruption. They crossbred and they made hybrid animals, and that was all part of the chamas and all part of the depravity which led to the whole destruction of the world. And therefore Hashem destroyed them. When we find these weird fossils of species which we don't have anymore, it's because they were crossbreeding these animals. And as a result, they gave birth to these crazy species. He probably doesn't mean a gomel, he means a donkey, probably. A mule. So here's the point. So how come we find it in the 20th century or the 19th century and Noah didn't see it right away? The fossils. So says the Netziv, it was deliberate. Hashem wanted at some future date we should discover these mysteries, these secrets. It's not a threat. Not a rabbi. It's Kavod Hashem. Shemasa Kavod Bashir Sayyam, etc. But what so then? Why wouldn't it have been a Kavod then? Ah, but also Ace, at that moment in time, Haya Harotso, Hashem Wanish, you, Nimuchim Minar, they should be totally obliterated from the world. Heshulia Nirim Klal. He didn't want Noach to see them. He stalled the Harkiv Od, Lahamid Brios Kelu Shanis. It was wrong, it was immoral, this crossbreeding. So knew Noach was a good guy who survived. But when Noach would come out, those didn't survive. This, if the Netziv is right, Alan, it would answer up, and Harry, it would answer up the Mabim as well. Yes, why did they survive? Because if they were byproducts of something that Hashem didn't want, so Adrabah, Hashem didn't want them to survive. And why didn't Noah see their remnants, their dead bodies, their bones when he came out? Because Hashem was worried that maybe it would be titillating. Yeah, it would titillating. You know, I could really use a good Tyrannosaurus Rex right now. And therefore Hashem, again, like the Malbim, it's very similar to the Malbim. It's not 100% identical, but very basically similar to the Malbim, that everything got turned over, and therefore they're finding these things very deep, and it's confusing them about the dates. Now it says, it comes from that same period of history. It came from those years leading up to the flood. And therefore, why is it confusing with dating? Because of this idea, Hashem lowered them on purpose. Why did he lower them? Because he didn't want Adam to get confused. Now again, this is a sliver of the discussion, but certainly the Malbim and the Netziv are two great, important sources to know whether others agree or disagree. Again, and you could see someone agreeing, being quote-unquote, I forgive me for the terms, but you could disagree with either of these from a conservative or liberal approach, if you will. And you could say, who said there are any species that we don't have now? Who made up such a thing? Kuyper? The Netziv, the Malbim never even called that, it's okay. Anyway, you could say that, or you could also say, then who said? Once you accept that there really are real fossils, of real species, not like some people try to make, you know, fret them away, oh, it doesn't mean anything, it doesn't exist, you can't trust science. No, the Nitziv and the Malbim didn't do that. I think that's an important thing to know. They didn't do that. But you could say, we should take it all the way to a logical conclusion and assume the very long dating of the world, which there it's never been a majority view, but there has always been a minority view of Gedol Yisrael that we're willing to accept that, whether it's based on that medrash of Olam HaSacheros or some version or other mafarshim speaking about how the days of creation were much longer than we consider a day. Different mafarshim have had different suggestions, but again, it's worth noting none of those have been a majority of Gedol Yisrael. The majority of Gedol Yisrael have taken, as I say, a much more conservative approach, probably even more conservative than the Malbim, more than the Sif. But that's for another topic, for another time. And even in this room, I'm not the expert on the topic. For that, you have to go to G. Okay, very good. Yishakot to all of you.